See, the University of Oregon is in a bit of a naming quandary, not the modern kind where you sell naming rights to a building, but the old kind where you name campus buildings after pillars of the community. Yesterday's pillar can be today's weird old uncle, or worse. Dedi Hall and Dunn Hall at the University of Oregon are named for men who lived and died generations ago. Both apparently held at least some racist views. Some people on campus want the names removed from the buildings, and University President Michael Schill is looking into it. One of his moves was hiring three historians to investigate the lives of Matthew Dedi and Frederick Dunn for detail and context. We have two of the three professors with us. David Allen Johnson is a professor at Portland State University and former managing editor of the Pacific Historical Review. David, thank you for joining us.
Hello.
And Marcia Weisiger is with us as well. She is the Julie and Rocky Dixon, Chair of U.S. Western History at the University of Oregon. Marcia, welcome to the Exchange.
Hello.
Good to have you here. So, Marcia, what was the charge from Michael Schill, the University of Oregon president? What did he give you guys as instructions?
Well, we were given a set of six questions, some of which had multiple questions as part of them, that had been created by a committee prior to them forming a panel of the historians, a committee of faculty and students, that had to do with whether or not Dedi or Dunn actively sponsored legislation that or lobbied on behalf of laws and policies that perpetuated acts of genocide or indigenous dispossession or slavery or other racially charged issues. We were asked about whether they had promoted violence on the basis of race or gender, had been part of a non-governmental organization that had promoted violence, engaged in practices, behaviors, or actions that brought infamy or dishonor on the university, or failed to take redemptive action to sort of remedy the kinds of racism that they may have perpetuated early on. Those kinds of questions.
Okay. I should mention there was a third historian involved here, Quintard Taylor at the University of Washington, who is not with us today. And I mispronounced Dedi as Dedi. So how did you divide, David, the duties between the three of you historians?
Well, it was a very, very active and intense collaboration throughout. And I think the document, the final document, does reflect the hand of each of us. It was actually, that was a remarkable experience for us. But we divided it up in terms of focusing on different aspects of the report. So, for example, Marcia spent a lot of time reading through Dedi's correspondence at the Oregon Historical Society, as well as materials on Dunn in the Oregon University of Oregon Special Collections. Quintard spent a great deal of time, Professor Taylor spent a great deal of time also collecting materials at a distance, working with the staff of the University of Oregon Special Collections on Dunn, and he read very carefully through the very, very long published diary that Matthew Dedi left behind. I focused a lot of my attention on Dedi's activities in the Constitutional Convention as well as his legal decisions as a federal judge. And then we worked together in writing it up. And each of us went through every word that we prepared. And as a matter of fact, I think it went through more than 10 drafts as we worked very, 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 very intensely in the last 5 or 6 days before the due date.
It's very well polished and is available online. Anybody can read it there, and anybody can also comment there as well. The comments will be taken until the end of the business day tomorrow. This was a lot of stuff to go through. What were the time periods, Marcia Weisiger, in which the two men lived? They didn't know each other, I gather.
Could you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
The time periods in which the men lived. They're very different parts of history here in Oregon.
Right. Well, Dedi was operating from the 1850s through until his death in the 1890s. Dunn's work here at the University of Oregon and his involvement with the Ku Klux Klan, which is the period we focused on, was in the 1920s.
All right.
So very different periods, but and so we looked at each of these men in the context of their times, what other people were saying about the same issues at the same time, what kind of support they had from people in Oregon for their views.
Which brings up a great point, Dr. Weisiger, which is, do you learn more about people from what they say about themselves in their own papers, or do you learn more from what other people say about them?
I think both are important. We were charged with looking at what these men had to say, and most importantly, what their actions were and what the legacies are of those actions. But it's also important to understand whether they were operating within or outside of the mainstream of public opinion at the time, and whether, I think all historians, we tend to judge people from the past, but you have to judge them based on whether they had the knowledge or the access to the knowledge to think differently than they did, or if everything was focused on the same kind of opinions that they held. And we found that both of them operated both somewhat in the mainstream, but also outside the mainstream of public opinion in Oregon.
We're talking about Matthew Deedy and Frederick Dunn, for whom buildings are named at the University of Oregon. The university is considering denaming those buildings based on some of the racist views held by either or both of the men. Marsha Weisiger and David Allen Johnson are two of the three historians charged by the university for looking into the pasts or the things that were said about the men and what they said about themselves as well. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now let's take a call from Jean in Winston. Welcome to the exchange.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I wondered if this same approach will extend to buildings and so on named after people who held extremist sexist views or religious views, where they would sort of be, you know, down on another religion or saying, you know, that men are better than women, that kind of thing.
Well,
so I just wondered, like, how far this approach to renaming buildings might extend.
Okay, that's a good question. I'm not sure either our guests are quite in a position to answer. David Allen Johnson, were you told just to look at the questions about feelings about race and nationality?
Well, in response to the question, I think that the answer would come from the president.
Right.
And it, you know, this is a particular case, and whether and to what extent it serves as a precedent for future building issues, I think, is really up to the campus community to decide.
Right.
If I could
just jump in and say that these were issues that have been raised by students and faculty regarding race, but the questions that we were asked to address also included sexism, and we could find actually very little in the record where either of these men had anything to say about women.
Either way, I understand. The record is just sort of
right. It was a very thin record in that regard. But whether or not other buildings might have other people who were repugnant in some way or another is hard to say. And that, again, as David was saying, is up to students and faculty. I mean, this is in response to their concerns about whether the U of O is a welcoming campus for people of all races and ethnic backgrounds and religion. Religion is, we brought up religion, ma'am, and that is at the heart of Dunn's actions on campus, so, and in the Eugene community. So we really were looking at religion as part of this as well.
Well, you know, Frederick Dunn, then, let's talk about him first, then, because his Klan membership alone is a very big stain, obviously. I mean, how big was the Klan in Lane County in the 1920s when it was very powerful in Oregon generally? Either one of you?
As the report, as the report describes, it was very prominent in Eugene. It was, you know, and also the state of Oregon, along with California. People oftentimes associate the Klan with the South, but in the 1920s in particular, it was a significant presence in the Pacific Northwest and the West Coast. So the, I'm going back here through our report, but I believe the membership was, Marcia, you remember, in the hundreds.
I believe it was something on the order of 400 members.
400, right.
And there were major parades held one of the most famous is in 1922, I believe it was, when the Klan marched down Willamette Boulevard, which is one of the main commercial streets through Eugene. But Dunn was more than simply a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He was the leader of the Ku Klux Klan here in Eugene. He was the Exalted Cyclops, which is a funny-sounding name, but it meant basically the president of the association. So it was much more than just being a member of an organization.
But this is not some guy who crawled out from under a porch in Mississippi. I mean, Dunn was highly educated and he was widely respected as a professor of classics.
Yes, he was, yeah. And he was had a very prominent role in building professional associations. He was, from all reports, a very popular teacher. He was engaged in the community in other ways as a Mason and as a member of his church. He did not, however, publicly discuss or comment or reflect upon his membership and leadership of the Klan in Eugene.
Interesting. And there was a response on campus, I understand. There were some people who belonged to the Klan on campus, but it sounds like a fairly large upswell against the Klan on the University of Oregon campus. Did he feel any heat from that, could you tell?
Other than knowing that the students at the University of Oregon spoke out against the Klan, we really don't have any knowledge of how Dunn responded to that. There was no diary that shows his own personal reflections on things. He kept a scrapbook that emphasized his role as a speaker. He spoke throughout the state on classics, and he also had served in World War I and then went back and visited Rome in the 1920s, came back speaking out for Armenian refugees. And yet the pages from the period of time in which he was a Klan member are missing from his scrapbook, but we don't know who removed them, if there were pages removed. We just know that during the period that he was in the Klan, there are no scrapbook pages. That could be that he removed them, his wife removed them, the librarian removed them. We don't know what the process was when those were donated upon his death in 1935.
Frederick Dunn and Matthew Deedy are the two men who held some racist views in their times in history, and they have buildings named for them at the University of Oregon campus, which troubles some people. The university is looking into it, which is why it hired the people we're talking to, David Allen Johnson, Marsha Weisiger, and the absent Quintard Taylor, to come up with a report about what was said and done by these men in regard to a series of questions about their racist views. You can join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Matthew Deedy is an interesting case. Certainly about 70 years before the life of Frederick Dunn was when he was generally operating here. Such a mixed bag here. I mean, he did believe in slavery, apparently, did believe in native rights to land, though, did seek to protect Chinese people from harassment and punishment. And David Allen Johnson, was any of this expressed in his court opinions as well?
In terms of what? I think everything you mentioned was expressed in his court opinions.
Okay. So,
and it's you know, it's a voluminous record. There are upwards of 1,000 decisions that he gave between 1859 and 1893. We looked specifically at the subset of about 220 of those. But yes, he touched on all of these issues. In his court decisions, he did not touch on none of them involved an African American.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting feat, aspect of it. But many of them did address questions about the citizenship and the larger constitutional rights of Chinese and Chinese American-born Chinese in an age where the Chinese were the subject of a great deal of violence and discrimination and prejudice. And he also addressed the question of Indian rights. And one of the things we gave quite a bit of attention to was the question of Indian citizenship.
All right. So, after the Civil War, what did Deedy have to say or demonstrate about African American rights?
You know, he it's complicated because it's not found in his public record. It's found in his private record, and it's mixed. On the one hand, he never repudiated his support of slavery, and as we point out in the report, he did record in his private journal that slavery was a positive good in terms of preparation for African Americans for freedom. Hmm. But on the other hand, one of his closest associates, the person who organized his office as a bailiff in his court, was an African American for many years.
Both of the bailiffs that he had the course of his career were African American, so they were his closest associates. So we find that interesting, but we really don't know. And he even traveled with his bailiff to, I believe it was Alaska, on a trip. That was a pleasure trip, apparently. But other than that, we really don't have his innermost thoughts on those issues.
Marsha Weisiger, ultimately, were you instructed just to focus on what the two men said and did? Or, I mean, is there some element of being able to put them in the context of their times and how common these views might have been?
Right. Well, we were asked to place this in its historical context. So one of the things I did was looked at... for both of them, well, particularly for Dunn, we looked at newspaper articles as well as his own papers to see how other people in the Eugene Springfield area felt, how other people in the state of Oregon felt about the Klan. In Dee Dee's case, I looked at his correspondence with colleagues, and we also, just as historians, know the context of how people felt about issues of African Americans, Native Americans, and Chinese immigrants, and how Dee Dee's actions fit within the broader outlines of American, and particularly U.S. Western history.
All right, Marsha Weisiger and David Allen Johnson with Quintard Taylor put together the report on the history of Matthew Dee Dee and Frederick Dunn for the University of Oregon to consider whether buildings named for them should be denamed. Public comments are being taken as well. Those will be taken online at the University of Oregon. The link is on our website, jeffexchange.org. Must be in by 5 o'clock on Wednesday. David Allen Johnson and Marsha Weisiger, thank you for joining us on the Exchange today.
Very welcome. Thank you.
All
right. Take care.